the games begin. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
For those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main floor and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening we are discussing step two. And we have an out-of-town panel tonight, all the way from Richmond. We have Mary and Dan that are going to share their experience on step two. And they'll introduce themselves when they speak. So we're going to get down to business and start reading. Let's see. So step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We're going to start on page 44. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you. But cheer up, something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral, we could wish to be philosophically comforted, in fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourselves, which would solve your problem. Whew. Okay. And I think I heard Dan was going to go first. Mm-hmm. All right. Happy.
Hey, everybody. I'm Dan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dan.
My sobriety date is August 23rd, 2010. I have a sponsor. And I am a sponsor. I have a home group in Richmond. It's Bonnie Big Book. We meet every Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, Congregation Ora Me. So if you're in the area, you're more than welcome. We'd love to have you. When I got here, when I had, I was pretty much at the end of my drinking. I was not ready to have it over with. I was still getting something from it. I was getting oblivion, which at the time was good enough. But I was in and out of the hospital. Like every 6 months, I would have a five-day stay with acute pancreatitis. And I was okay with that. I had made my decision if that's the price I had to pay to have alcohol in my life, which I didn't see any other option, then that was okay. My doctor, shaking his head, had a good one-on-one conversation with me and told me that, you know, I was going to die. And I said, well, I'm cool with that. That's fine. But I wasn't happy with the speed at which this was happening. It was going really slow, and it was painful. And my doctor assured me that it would continue to be slow and painful, and that I really needed to do something. And so I found myself at what I've come to know as the jumping off place. And I couldn't see myself not drinking. That made no sense. And, I knew I couldn't keep drinking. And so I found myself in a very ineffective suicide attempt. And after which I decided, well, maybe I'll go to rehab and try this out. So I ended up in Williamsburg at a treatment center. And I knew from past experience that I was going to have to go to AA, and they required that. And I knew that AA had to do with God, and I wanted nothing to do with that. I mean, I was an atheist. And in many sense of the words, I still am, because the ideas of God presented to me thus far by most organized religion, I reject. But what I found in AA is something different. So I found myself in this position of needing a spiritual experience to solve my problem. And I agreed wholeheartedly. I was powerless. I was screwed. I had this problem. I knew I had a problem. But I really didn't think your spiritual solution was going to fix it either. Obviously, because I didn't believe in God, and I didn't believe in religion, and I didn't, you know, I had a spiritual past and in a church, and I wanted nothing to do with that. And if I had to die, that was what I was going to do. But, like I said, it was going to be slow and painful, so I was willing to take some steps, to take some action. I love in the second paragraph where it says, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. That was me. That was me. You know, alcoholic death, spiritual life, this is a toughie. So this is not a solution I embraced. But it was all you had, and it was all you offered. And so at some point in treatment, and at that time we went through the Big Book every day. We had a class. It was like an hour and a half. And somewhere along the way, I came to a place where I said, okay, I don't think it's going to work. I certainly don't believe you in your spiritual stuff. But I'm willing to at least hear you out and maybe try some stuff. So that's what I've got for now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
My name is Mary. I'm an alcoholic.
Mary.
My sobriety date is July 31st, 2013. I have a sponsor who I absolutely adore. My home group is Bonaire Big Book. Congregation or me, 8 o'clock on Wednesday evening. Come see us. It's a great place. And I sponsor women. And I'm very involved in service, and it's actually the highlight of my life. So, you know, I really love this chapter, and I love this step because I didn't want to have anything to do with it. I can remember, you know, I had been around for quite a long time, and, you know, I was going on this, like, traveling road show of, you know, rehabs and detoxes all across the country, because surely the reason why I couldn't stay sober was because I didn't pick the right one. You know, they didn't have the right one. So I was, at this time I was in Ohio, and I had been around for quite a long time, and I remember picking up the phone and calling my sponsor, and we had been through the Big Book a couple of times, and I said, "Sammy, it's all about God." She said, "No blank, Mary." You know, because it just, my mind was just so snap shut. You know, I just didn't even hear it. So when I really, and I think that the whole thing with me is, I really didn't have step one. So what point is step two if you don't have step one? You know, I didn't know that I was powerless. You know, I still tried everything. I didn't realize that I exhausted all my options. You know, I didn't realize that it happened without me even knowing it. You know, I thought if only I picked the right religion, if only I picked the right rehab, if only I married, maybe if I marry a religious person who doesn't drink or smoke or swear, you know, if I have the right car, the right job, you know, none of the things worked. And then finally I had exhausted all these options, and I was finally hopeless, you know, but that was the condition that I needed to have. And I finally became willing. So what I love most about this chapter is it tells how to develop this relationship and where to find it, you know, because that's where the whole thing came to me at that point was, okay, well, I know now that I don't have the power. I know that I need to find this power greater than myself. You know, I have all these old ideas and all these prejudices that I know that you're telling me to set aside, and I get that, but where do I find it? You know, I wanted to know where it was because I saw all these people had it. I just didn't know how to get it. So I kept on saying, I don't get it. You know, I don't get the spiritual part. You know, I know why I can't stay sober because I don't get the spiritual part. You know, and I didn't even think. It's like I always thought I knew what I didn't know, you know, until I became just completely open, you know. But the strength of the words that are in this where it says that I must find this or else, you know, that's what really, like, drove me in my gut. It was like, you must or else. And my sponsor clearly said to me, it's God, Mary. You know, she said, it's not a doorknob. You know, it's God, because I, you know, it would have been, if it can be a doorknob, I would rather it be a doorknob, because I had prejudices, you know, and old ideas. It was more, would have been easier and softer for me to accept the doorknob, you know, but she told me it was God. So how and where is what I was left with at this point.
Thank you. All right, the next reading is on page 46. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with Him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek Him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men.
Okay. This paragraph was absolutely crucial in in my second step experience. Because what I was deeply afraid of was that I was going to have to adhere to someone else's belief system again. I had, like I mentioned before, I had a religious involvement earlier in my life. I had rejected that eventually, and I didn't want that. And I had these ideas coming into AA that you guys had something that you believed in and that I was going to have to accept it. And I was really afraid that was going to stand between me and getting sober. And it was a relief when I read this. And number one, that these people back then, the ones that wrote the book, felt the same way. And number two, that, oh, I don't have to believe what they believe. It says so right here. And that was awesome. And the fact that they used the terms creative intelligence and spirit of the universe, it just sort of reinforced that it really didn't matter. I didn't even have to call it God, whatever it is. It's just a power greater than me. And, you know, I'd spent a pretty long amount of time playing God and trying to run the show. And so it was just, it was kind of easy for me to accept that, you know, maybe there's something else out there that's just not me. The first paragraph on 47, where it talks about do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you. Again, that was a relief, and I could easily recognize it. You know, I had all these issues from my previous experience, so I knew I had to set them aside. Now, accomplishing that is a little more difficult because I keep going back to them. I keep going back. But again, and I'm very, very grateful for the desperation that I had when I walked in the door, because the desperation made me willing to do some of these things that I didn't want to do. You know, I wanted to get sober because I didn't want to die a long, painful death.
What I really like about this is I like where it says, it talks about seeking God. You know, and I can remember when I said to my sponsor, I said, well, how do I develop this relationship? How do I develop a conception of God that's my own? Because my conception was based upon my childhood and, you know, the tradition and influences in my life. I never had a conception that was personal to me. So I didn't know how to get one. And so she said, you need to seek God where he may be found. And she said, you can't look here and here and here and not here and here and here, which was extremely confusing to me. But what I realized from that was God wasn't where I wanted him to be or where I thought he should be. He was where he was. You know, and I was too busy looking in where I expected him to be in the way that I expected him to be because of my old ideas and my prejudices that had to be set aside. So I think that was the whole thing for me, was willingness. You know, this foundation that was so necessary of complete willingness for me to just say, okay. You know, when she'd say, Mary, this is what you need to do. You know, when you wake up in the morning, you know, you need to ask God to come with you. You need to open up the door and you need to ask him to walk alongside you. You need to open up the door for him. You need to talk with him throughout the day. And I'm saying, I don't get that, you know, but I've just learned to say, okay. Anything I was told, I said okay. And I think that's the main point in here. I seek God every day. You know, I never know where I expected him to be was definitely not where I found him.
Thank you. The next reading is on page 47. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Dan.
I know I've said it a couple times already, and maybe that's part of my experience with this chapter, is that I had all these ideas in front of me, and Bill seems to be breaking them down one by one as I get to them. And here I say, I knew that you guys said I had to believe in God. I remember going to a meeting, this was in 2006, it was 4 years before I got sober, it was after DUI, and someone in the meeting, they said, "Do you believe in God?" I was like, "No." "Well, you will." And I was just like, "Oh, that's kind of scary." But here this says, "Do I now believe?" "No." "Or am I even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself?" And yeah, okay, I'm willing. If this power is out there, I guess it's to my advantage to know that and to take advantage of that and to take you guys at your word. Again, I really didn't want it. I didn't want this to be the solution. My sponsor also made a big point in this period as we went through the book. She said, "Do you believe that I believe?" I said, "Oh yeah, I've no doubt that you believe this." She was good enough. Let's keep going. I was like, "Okay, that was easy. Thanks." So, thanks.
I would have said at that point in time when somebody would say to me, "Do you believe in God?" I would say, "I believe that there is a God. I just don't believe that God is going to help me. I believe that I was too bad, that I had made too many mistakes, and I believed that I wasn't worthy. That's truly what I believed. But I did expect him, you know, people kept on saying that there was this God who loved me and was there for me. And I just had to tap into that. I said, "I don't know. He needs to prove that, because I've asked him too many times and he hasn't done it." You know, because he didn't do the things that I wanted him to do. You know, for example, I'd be driving down the street and my sponsor would say I couldn't drive. Like, I would always end up, my car would go in this certain direction that it wasn't supposed to go. And she'd say, and I would end up beating my hands on the table saying, "What happened?" You know, and she'd say, "Mary, you know, what happened?" And I'd say, "Well, I was driving down the street and I saw that sign." And she'd say, "Why don't you just go another way? You know, if the sign bothers you, go another way." So to me, that seemed completely irrational that, you know, I'm 44, I should be able to drive down the street without, you know, going in that direction. So I'm not going to listen to that. So what I would do is, at first, I would close my eyes when I would get like a mile before the sign so that I wouldn't see it, because that was truly more rational. Or what I would do is, right prior to getting to the sign, I would say, "God, if you're real and you're here for me, just stop me. Just don't let me drive in that direction. Don't let me drive in that direction." And my car would go in that direction. I'd say, "See, you're not real." And that's what it was for me. You know, God had to prove that he was there for me, because, you know, if that would happen, like if my car would have stopped dead in its tracks, then I would buy everything everybody was saying. But if not, then everything you were saying was just, you were all deluded and fanatics to me. So what I remember that what it really came down to me was I even willing to believe? I didn't know. I wanted to be willing. I really wanted to, but I didn't know how to make myself willing. Circumstances made me reasonable about the matter. But I can remember my sponsor saying, "It's a mustard seed, Mary. You only have to have the amount of a mustard seed." You know, that's like the biggest tree. She told me from a mustard seed, you get the biggest tree from this little teeny little speck. She said, that's all you need to make a beginning. So finally, I became reasonable and I said, okay. So,
thank you. Let's see, we're going to move to page 52. We have to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. Dan?
My sponsor's husband is very fond of saying, "Oh yeah? Well, how's that been working for you?" And where it says, our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. And, you know, I had to agree with that. I didn't accept the God idea, and my life was a mess. And the bedevilment. Untreated alcoholism at its best. Having trouble with personal relationships. By the time I got sober, I really didn't have any personal relationships. It was the people at the office and me. We couldn't control our emotional natures. I remember during the last days sitting in front of my computer drinking, watching videos on YouTube of sick kids and mistreated animals and just losing it emotionally and boo hoo hoo. And then, of course, I get on Facebook and share about that. Prey to misery and depression. Oh my gosh. That was me. I went to several professionals about my depression. And some of them had the nerve to think I might be alcoholic. Made no sense. No. I'm depressed. Couldn't make a living. That was almost going to come true for me. I was very close to losing my job. I didn't, which was very fortunate because the insurance I had at the time paid for Williamsburg. Feeling of uselessness, absolutely. I remember thinking, I really need to quit my job and I'm going to join the Peace Corps. And I won't be able to drink out in the jungle. And seriously, and I have emails in my save folders from the Peace Corps and my communications with them when I was looking into that. And I really, there was a desire to be useful to other people, to have some sort of meaning in my life, because my life was, just go to work and drink, and that was it. It was depressing. Full of fear, 100 forms of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, AA taught me all about what was really driving my behavior. Unhappy, couldn't seem to be of real help. This is me. They knew me when they wrote this book, which is pretty amazing.
So, my A game brought me here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my A game brought me to depression, misery, fear, no personal relationships. So it all came down to, okay, I will try to do anything I can to prove that religious people are wrong, that the God idea doesn't work, but the crux of the matter is, would I rather be a mother to my children or prey to misery and depression? You know, what do I want? What do I really want in my heart of hearts? You know, what if what everybody said was true? You know, why couldn't I just examine the possibility of whether it could possibly be true? And that's as simple as it was. Maybe it could be, you know? And what did I have to lose, really? You know, misery and depression, you know? Wanted to kill myself every day, you know? Everybody in my life didn't want to have anything to do with me. I could benefit nobody or nothing. I had nothing, living in the streets by myself when I had my family over there crying over me. Really, what's the trade-off? You know, I had nothing to lose and everything to gain, just to open my mind up to the possibility of what if? What if it's true? You know, maybe I should just open myself up just to the option. So,
thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to hop to the back of the book, Appendix 2, which in the big book is 568, page 568. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. Dan.
I think it's pretty funny in the section in Chapter 4, several spots, there's an asterisk saying, go read the spiritual experience, go read the spiritual experience. Well, I'm not going to go do that, because if it was important enough, it would be up in Chapter 4 with the rest of the text. But the guy that taught our big book class took us back to page 568. I have highlighted, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. In other words, acts just like Dan. Because that's where I was. And I could only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. Yay, that's me. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. Amen. It has been my experience over and over and over that every good thing that comes to me in recovery is a result of having willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness. I came in here wanting to have a sure knowledge of the nature of a power greater than myself. And I had to be okay with not knowing. And as I became okay with not knowing and had some open-mindedness about the whole thing and was honest to myself and to my sponsor, and was willing to take some actions which, quite frankly, again, I didn't think it was going to work. I didn't believe it would work. You know, I was kind of biding my time until I drank again, and then I'd find some way to kill myself because this was not going to work. And here the text says that if I can honestly face my problems and go forward with this attitude, that I can recover. That's pretty neat stuff for a guy like me. I'm very, very grateful that I didn't have to embrace someone else's vision of a power that's greater than me. I'm grateful that someone taught me that it doesn't matter what I think, feel, or believe. It only matters what I do. So I think my feet probably, was carrying my sobriety for a long time, because I would, I'd go to meetings and I'd do what I was told, because I wanted this. And as I stayed here for a while, I really wanted it because things were getting better. And I was, every day didn't suck anymore. And some days were pretty darn good, and things were looking better. So, that's what I got.
I wanted the experience Bill had. I wanted the white light. I wanted the fireworks and the lightning bolt. I wanted the burning bush. That's where I expected it to be found. That's truly what I expected, and that's what I was looking for, and when it didn't happen, I would just think it wasn't real. I came to believe. It wasn't something that I automatically believed. It's something that developed when I became honest, open-minded, and willing. I didn't understand how essential these things were. I wanted so much to be honest, but I just wasn't. I wanted to be willing, but I wasn't. I wanted to be open-minded. My eyes would be open, but everything in me would be shut. I couldn't hear anything that anyone was saying because I was so convinced that I had all the answers. I came to believe when I realized that I didn't find God in a burning bush, but I found him in your voice and your words. When I see him in my child's laughter. When I'm so afraid because there's a storm, but yet I feel safe and protected. I expected things to be a certain way, and those things had to just be set aside so that something new could be developed and cultivated within me. And then everything changed. Dan and I were talking about it on the way up about how this cultivates with us throughout time. Certain things will happen, like, for example, my son graduated on Saturday, and his mother, who we've had a terrible relationship, like, I'm talking really bad. She came to the graduation, and I haven't seen her for, let's see, he's 17, so maybe 16 years at all. And the last time was not pretty, let's just put it that way. So I never thought about the fact that I was going to see her. I knew she was going to be there, but it just didn't dawn on me that, I didn't think, how am I going to handle that situation, or what am I going to do, or what am I going to do when I see her? It just didn't even enter my mind. And I saw her, and I walked up to her, and I hugged her, and I said, congratulations. How was your trip? I hope that you had a safe trip here. It's good to see you. And then I hugged her mother, and my daughter looked at me floored and said, that was so big of you. I never even dawned on me. How does that happen? How does that happen? That's how I know. I come to believe when I see the fact that I'm sober today and I couldn't no matter what. I come to believe when someone who would have punched her in her face and not cared about anything or anyone just because I could. But I'm hugging her and wishing her well and not even thinking about it. It's intuitive. How does that happen? I'm floored. But it's like those are the things that's where God shows himself in ways that I didn't expect. I didn't expect it there, but it's where it is. I found God in a place that I didn't expect to find him deep down inside of me. That's the last place I would have looked. Thanks.
Thank you. Now we're going to skip back to page 17. We are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who normally would not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. But that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Thank you.
When I first got here, I thought the things that I was doing and the things I was reading and studying, I thought I was acquiring. I thought I was gaining knowledge and gaining spiritual, I was gaining spirituality. I was gaining things. I was getting stuff. And what I have discovered in my time here is that the exact opposite is true. What is happening is stuff is falling away. And hopefully, the stuff that is falling away is what is keeping me away from this power of the universe that probably on its own has always been there. Maybe it was there when I was a kid. And just as life went on, I just started picking up these little resentments and fears and this and that and all this knowledge in my head, and also my ego is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger until I'm just, like the book says, I'm self-will run riot. It's all up here, man. My whole life is up there. And I've cut myself off from this underlying totality, this underlying power greater than myself, spirit of the universe, creative intelligence. I've cut myself off. And the only way I can get through life at the end there was drinking. The fun days have long since been over. It was a lot of fun at first, until it wasn't. And then it was just to make the pain stop, just to stop the thinker gone wild in my head that just won't shut up. And I find myself here, and instead of focusing on self, I do things which are that take away from the self. And what's left is this relationship with this power that you guys talk about. I found it in this fellowship that, again, I wanted nothing to do with. I had been here. This was my first AA experience, 2006, DUI. My lawyer says, you need to go to this alcohol treatment program to show to the judge that you're repentant. And so I go to this weekly thing, and this guy makes us go to one AA meeting a week. So I go to the clubhouse down the street from where I live, and I can smoke there, which is cool. So I smoke like a chimney too. And, they say the same things week after week. So I learned, I get there about 5 or 10 minutes late, and then I leave 5 minutes early so I don't have to listen to that crap. Obviously, those people are stupid. And that's my AA experience for the time that I'm seeing this therapist. So fast forward 4 more years, and I'm at the jumping off place, and they said, you gotta go to AA. Man, at least I can smoke. But here I find myself with people of really, really different from me. We come from all sorts of different backgrounds, all sorts of different educational levels. Alcohol is no respecter of persons. And it's in these rooms that you guys taught me about the solution to my problem. And the problem not only allowed me to not drink anymore and be happy at the same time, which that's pretty cool, but I'm able to use this same solution in all areas of my life. Yeah. At work, with my friends, with my family. And when I do that, things turn out pretty good. They may not be according to the plan that I've set forth up here, but it's pretty good nonetheless. And it's been a pretty good experience being here with you guys. So.
Thank you.
So when I first got sober, I was very, very dusty. You know, like Pigpen from the Peanuts with the big swirl around me, you know. And it was probably 2 months. I was about 60 days sober when I finally realized that I was homeless. You know, I had no clue. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm homeless. I can't believe this. So every day we would read one chapter. I'm in a homeless shelter that has a recovery program in it. And every day we would read a different chapter. Like, remember towards the end of my drinking, I went to my husband's minister at church. And I said, you know, I said, everybody always says that God's not going to give you more than you can bear. You know, I was so filled with self-pity. And obviously, this is not true because I can't bear more than I'm going through right now. You know, what does he think I'm made of if this God is real? You know, because this is just ridiculous and unfair and unjust that I'm going through all this torture. So he said to me, you're not reading on, Mary. You know, what it says after that part is that you will be provided a way out. So I'm like, well, okay, well, what's the way out? He's like, I don't know, you know? So I'm like, okay, whatever. So as I'm in this homeless shelter, we're reading, you know, a chapter every single week. Two months had gone by. I just figured out I was homeless. And the one day came where we read this chapter, and I read that bottom part, and I was floored where it says, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. And I was floored. This was the way out. I had no idea. So that's when everything kind of changed. Up until that point, I never really truly identified with everybody here. I would always try to see what was different, you know, like your bottom was different than mine, or you know, this happened to you or this happened to me, so we're not the same. But I really came to realize that we all got to the same place. We may have wore different shoes, you know, but we truly ended up in the same spot. What brought us together was that common peril, but what keeps us together is the common solution. You know, the way out, which we can completely agree. This is where I really knew that this is where I was supposed to be, and everything just totally changed from that point.
Thank you. And that's all of our readings for Step 2 tonight. So I'd like to thank Mary and Dan for sharing. The baskets, if someone could grab those for me. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements tonight? And I can't see everybody, so let me know. Woohoo! No announcements. Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Let's raise our hands for the home group members. All right. And here's the important part of the meeting, newcomers. Is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves so we can welcome you? Just introduce yourself by your first name. All right, very good. We'll have to go round some up. Okay, we have a literature table over there. Anything you can fold is free. There's newcomer packets if anyone is new and hasn't got one. Books are for sale. Please just see one of the home group members for that, to pay for that. And let's see, sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, Stephanie, Evan, and David are going to be up here at the table. One of those are all three. So anyway, if you have any questions about sponsorship, somebody will be up here and be glad to help you with that. Let's see, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay away from the doors of the church because other people are also using the building. We do record the meetings, and we have a website that you can hear all of the meetings that we've had here at Simple Actions, and that is simpleactions.net, and we have an email sign-up on that website also if you'd like to know about any upcoming events that we're having, supper and speaker and such. And I'd like to thank the panel once again for sharing. All right. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on Colonial and 22nd Street. And someone is going to volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. That would be Evan.
Cool, my name's Evan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Evan.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thanks for reading, and thanks everybody for coming out. We close with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Stay.